Welcome to part two of the rebroadcast of our interview with Alpha Omega winemaker Jean Fia. Do you get a chance to hang out with other winemakers here in the valley?
Yeah, I do quite often. Last time was last night. We make we custom crush for Domaine Chandon. They're still Pinot Noir program, and so Jim Kress, the winemaker there, was there last night. And for me, it's a huge part of winemaking. I'm not at all the type to protect myself. I'm not at all the type to hide. I'm the opposite. I invite people to criticize me. I invite people to doubt me, because it's gonna make me grow ultimately, you know? And so I created, in addition to having different, you know, friends around the valley and winemakers that come, I actually created a tasting panel. And on that tasting panel, I had European winemaker, American winemakers, distributors, consumers, knowledgeable consumers, and just regular consumers, that I send every time I make a wine. I send them a paper that always starts by, don't tell me it's good, I don't need to hear that. Tell me what you do not like. And I like that, because wine is not a precise science. Wine comes back to taste, therefore it's subjective. So I would like people to comment. I like the dialogue, I like the exchange. Wine, to start with, is something that is social. So it needs to be an exchange, a debate. You know, I might not like the color of my shirt one day, and you might love it. Wine is exactly that way, and even more intimate, because you actually take it inside of you and consume it. So I think there's an intimacy factor that is quite impressive in wine.
I know you had an emergency in one of the vineyards today. Can you tell me what happened?
Well, 2008 is a quite challenging year, but a challenging year for me always says great, because people that understand wine will make the difference. So people that really love what they do will come out bigger and stronger. And the reason why I'm saying this, it started with one of the worst frosts in Napa history. It continued with an early, very early heat spell. Then we had fire and smoke, which were all around the valley with a smoke cover, you know, that was there. Everybody was kind of afraid of the effect it would have on the grape. I didn't think it would be a problem, and so far it hasn't. So, knock on wood. I'm just knocking on my neighbor's head, sorry. And so that was challenging. Then we had rain during flowering, some certain varietal shatter. But all this for me was just nature's way of limiting the yield, reducing the amount of grapes that are out there. When we get closer to harvest, like now, the ripeness is actually a two-phase system. You have the ripeness of sugar, which is the level of sugar that you want to ferment a wine into alcohol to decent levels. But you have the real ripeness, the ripeness of aromas and tannins in reds. And that's the type of ripeness that you want. That's the type of ripeness that you're looking for. Sugar is not so much of a problem. In Napa Valley, you always have enough sugar. We're not in Switzerland, you know, where it starts raining in the middle of August for 5 days in a row, and it could hail and stuff like that. Here, the climate is very, very favorable to great and outstanding wine. So when grapes are getting closer to being picked and being ripe and being fully developed, if you have what we had over the last 10 days and these big spikes of over 100 temperature, your vineyards and your vine react differently. They react to the climatic changes, to this stress, very differently. What happened is usually by then the sugars goes up really very fast. But the aromas and tannins do not follow, meaning you're gonna have high sugars, but you're gonna have tannins that are still green and edgy, and you're going to have aromas that are not as expressive as they should be. It is to the winemaker to adapt to the condition. And the emergency I had, when I receive a call from one of my vineyard manager that says, Jean, I'm really stressed. I know you run your samples on your, you know, by yourself and stuff like that, but I just ran a couple of samples, and here are where we are. We are 27 bricks. I need to go out right away, because it's a very fine line between having the exact ripeness and being overripe. Overripe, where you get a little bit more pruny, port type of aromas, you know, underripe, where you would get these tannins and not as much expression. Well, it's a huge, huge issue to find the right balance. And sometimes, very often, it actually does make a difference with one, 2 or 3 days. And I've seen wines in the past where it did a difference of a 2 day difference with these conditions. So when somebody called me like that, I had to go down, taste that Merlot, you know, make sure that it was where we wanted. And in that particular case, we'll pick it tomorrow and it's gonna come in because I had to go measure. It's like a human, are you gonna marry somebody over the phone? No, you have to see them, you have to feel them, you have to sense them. That's exactly what I did by going down there and tasting it. And I took Chelsea with me because I do for the different partners and the employees a weekly update where I actually write what's going on in the life of the company. And so in order to save me time, Chelsea jumped in my car and actually listened to what I had to say to help me with the grammatical and language side of things of that update. Because as you can hear it during that interview, I'm sure, I'm not, you know, English is not my mother tongue, so.
Your decision was to pick right away.
Yes, yes. Because I went down and I walked these rows and I really thought that if I was going to leave that particular block hanging longer with the wind, right now we don't have high temperatures, all right? But we have wind. Wind accelerates the evapotranspiration of the plant. Therefore, you have a much bigger risk of shriveling grapes. And you don't really want a huge percentage of shrivelage because these are notes that ultimately you want to be one part of the full spectrum, but not an overpowering part. And so I went down there and decided to pick. The last time before that I actually tasted that block was 3 days ago. But you know what? I'm happy that, you know, they start to know and understand what I look and what I want. And the vineyard manager actually calls me to say, hey, just come and take a look. And I do.
That has to give you a great deal of confidence, too.
Yeah, you have to. Anything is not made alone. You know, you can be as passionate and as great as you want to be. I think it's a teamwork, you know, from the pickers to the viticulture to the owners to everybody. Everybody has a role in something. And I think that the difference is very often made in precision. You need people that are dedicated, passionate, because they need to be willing to work and to be precise at something that they love. And these are the type of people I like. I mean, I don't think winemakers are these hotshots at all. I think winemakers, the great winemakers, are the one that can understand to follow their heart, not their book and their studies and all this. So it's a pretty cool team.
So what's coming out next for you?
The next vintage coming out after the 2005 you taste is the 06. And the 06 should come out probably by spring of next year. We'll have you taste it for sure. The reason why, it actually was bottled 3 weeks ago. But I like to age my wines in the bottle because one, it gives not only the different components of the wine more time to accept each other and create a synergy, but it also allows the wine to soften itself off the influence of the barrel. You know, barrel for me, it should never be overpowering. Barrel should be, the wood should be one of the many components of a wine. So when I sense and I taste that the wine's ready to come out, it's out. If it's not ready, you know, the market's not ready for it, we'll wait. That's great, but we cannot have it stay in the barrel. So for me, the balance and the personality is important. And at that time I decided, let's take it out. Let's make sure that it softens and accepts each other, you know, itself within the bottle. Before we release it. And so we'll release the wine when it's ready to be released, when the potential of the personality of the wine is at its peak. That for me is, you know, or at least let's put it this way, at my peak. Am I right? No, I'm not. It's just my peak. And in that particular, you know, model, I make the decision on when to release the wine. And that's why I say, you know, I try to find ways of people to make the wine the way they want. If it's an early wine and we release it in spring and somebody opens that and it's super powerful, I'm going to tell the person, decant it, splash it as a Coke 3 hours before you drink it. And it will hopefully reach what they are looking for into wine. I think the biggest challenge for today's winemaker is to create wine that are drinkable at age zero or at age zero plus 20 years. Because especially on an American market, people want to consume their purchase very, very early. 85% of wine purchased in America are drank within the day. So these are things that you have to know and understand. And I'm not ready to compromise on my philosophy of wine and my quality or the quality I like of wine. So, you know, the barrel fermentation that you saw is one of the system that allows me to have a wine that is drinkable and soft early, or that could age depending on the profile of, you know, the consumer and what the consumer likes.
How long do you bottle age?
It changes a lot. It changes on profile, you know, and on the bottle shock as well. You know, every single wine will react differently to change of environment. So some wines will go in the bottle shock, and very often with my wines at least, right after bottling, it tastes great in the bottle. But then 3-4 weeks after, that's when you see the suffering of the wine being pushed that hard express itself, because it closes itself. And sometimes it takes 2-3 months to open. Sometimes in Bordeaux, I encountered wine that took, 7 years to open from a bottle shock. Is it the bottle shock? Is it the wine? That's another discussion. It's probably a little bit of both. But, you know, it's to be able to understand that wine is something that is alive and that changes, I think allows people to react differently on wine when they drink it. Because if you get to know wine and start a relationship with wine, then you'll understand better what you need to do to get along. But I mean, you know, you sometimes have bad surprises as well. I mean, you know, when one of your little babies, you know, have decided not to cooperate or being nice, you have to understand how to read it. And I'll be very honest with you, I had a Chardonnay that was fermenting still a year after. Well, guess what? I tasted. If the aromatic profile was to my liking and it was not affected by off flavors and stuff, let it work. 80% of the wines that I ferment, since they're naturally fermented, stop fermenting at Christmas. Why? Because nature's shutting down. Winter, I'm sorry, do you see blooming and beautiful flowers in the middle of winter? No, it doesn't. Well, yeast reacts exactly the same way, so it stops. So that stresses a lot of people, because I'm going to have to do a starter and re-inoculate. Just let it sit in the barrel. And funny enough, February, March, you see bubbles starting to reappear. Well, guess what? It's spring. Nature starts again. Same in your wine. It's just a question of understanding. I think in an ideal world, what you really want is to put the, if you could, would be to put the grapes directly in the bottle and not to stress them, push them, hit them too hard. So if you look at wine history, wine trends, Bordeaux Primeur program, well, they need to taste the wine early. So they do malolactic in barrel. Why? Because the malolactic, then the wine touches barrel faster, accepts the barrel faster, the wine tastes better. Well, on barrel fermentation, it's exactly the same principle. By putting it on oak right at the beginning, the oak flavors are better integrated, the tannins are better integrated, and the wine is softer. So what I do is take a barrel, take the head up, off the top, put the grapes and skins in there, and actually ferment in there and regulate temperature in there as a smaller container for sure, but also as all these different aromas that will see a relationship or an interaction later in their life anyway, do it early. And so far it works, and we will be tasting as soon as Chelsea decides to finally work. No, I'm just kidding. And bring us some Era, which is the new wine we're coming out in 06. We're coming out with a wine called Era. And it's actually a blend of 35% Cabernet Sauvignon, 35% Merlot, 15% Petit Verdot, and 15% Cabernet Franc. So high percentages of Petit Verdot and Cabernet Franc. And it's 100% barrel fermented. And Chelsea will bring some to us, and you'll tell us if you think I'm right. And this wine was bottled a week ago, but we have a barrel in the tasting room to let people taste. And you'll let me know. And I really think that's the case.
It looks like you punch down the cap, right?
Yes, we do punch downs, yeah. We do punch downs between 5 times a day to 0. And the way we do it is I start a cold maceration at the beginning to extract fruit, because in Napa you have usually higher sugar, therefore higher alcohol. So the fruit extraction for me is very important before the presence of alcohol. And so the more we move within the fermentation, the less I'm going to extract, because the more presence of alcohol will be. Therefore, the more chances of extracting very strong tannins you will have. And I see wine altogether, and especially Napa, as being the best of both worlds. The winemakers need to understand to me that we are so lucky to live in a climate in a region like that, which have great climate, great terroir. Well, we have to work on what we don't have. What don't we have? Well, sometimes we miss of elegance, finesse, and acidity, which is for me, the acidity is the backbone of a wine. Well, we need to be able to work on that. And I think these are things that steps that are that need to be taken in order to reach the perfect wine, or at least my perfect wine. Is it everybody's? Of course not. But that balance between the elegance, the acidity, the extraction, and the ripeness of Napa needs to be reached. And things like the barrel fermentation help doing that, help reaching that balance and that, you know, that hopefully perfect wine.
So Jean, what do you like to drink?
Everything but my own wine, to be very honest with you. I think the worst threat to a winemaker is house taste. I mean, my parents still live in Switzerland. Every single time I go back, my parents, his friends, my uncle, they serve great wines, great Bordeaux, Burgundies, and stuff like that. And they say, just remember, you can always do better. That's all. Yeah, there's always room for improvement. So if I'm satisfied with my own taste, I don't challenge myself. If I don't challenge myself, I can't guarantee people that will end up drinking the wine I make, that it will progress, that it will become better, that there will be an evolution. And I think, you know, once again, I'm not a genius. I'm a guy that loves what he does and that will try to improve every single time. And that's all I guarantee. I'll try to improve. I'll try to make things better. I'll try to listen to comments, opinions, to try to change my own philosophy down the line. So if I'm not here, try to, you know, travel the world and drink wines that challenge aspects that we don't have. Drink Bordeaux, drink Burgundy, higher acidity. Don't forget acidity is very important here. Drink, you know, South American, Australian. Good, different climate, hot climate, you know, new markets, different, very often different price points. Good to challenge yourself as well. I'm a big believer in judging your own work by comparing yourself to others. When I make a wine, I love to have it in the middle of a blind tasting and just challenge the others to see if I'm doing this right or wrong.
Jean, anything else you'd like to add?
Well, you know, I would just add, come and see us, you know, measure what I think we're at. We have a great view. Hopefully the hospitality is humble. That's what we go through. And we have a very good, open-minded team ready to share taste, share impressions and feelings. And you know, another great thing, as you saw, is that setting. And to be able at Harvest, you can know you're gonna be here until 11 anyways. Sit out on the deck with a glass of wine at the end of the day, take a little breather, go back to work. And that's really what the entire company is about. And I really enjoy that. I mean, it's fun.
Thank you, Jean.
Thank you very much. You know, if you let me talk, I'll talk until tomorrow. So.
You can find Alpha Omega on the web at aowinery.com.
Thanks for listening to this program. Watch for our next podcast coming soon. Remember, you can also download our podcasts from iTunes and like us on Facebook. Cheers.
Life Between the Vines was produced at Fifth Floor Recording Company in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Produced and edited by Ray Pfister. Original music by Tim Turton. Our intern is Ben Geishan. Web design by Jenny Holland. Our web geek is Tim Panicucci. Photos by Jeanette Herniak. Copyright 2013.